Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I'm an SFB-online, FedCom online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just remind you how to join us by Talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website, www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702. Or search for Starfleet Universe On Call, or better yet, go to twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv/SFU On Call. You'll find a live feed there. Yes, we are. We'll be live on twitch.tv. And so you can join us there and join the chat room and actually watch my lovely face and hopefully not crack your screen. I hope I don't do that. Sorry if I do. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you want to follow me on Twitter. My podcasting account is over there at sfuoncall. There you'll find the weekly YouTube video post and also the topic of the week, at least the planned topic for the week. And that might be the topic of the week, or it might change. You never know. And of course, I have my personal account, which is Paul Franz. It's PAUFRANZ. There is no T in that. And just a reminder that if you want to follow me, that's great. By all means, follow me. But it's the warning that I am very happy to be a very faithful Catholic, a big O's fan, and Lord knows that's hard to do sometimes. And of course, also, I love all kinds of technology. So any of those bother you, don't follow me. And of course, I also have the Franz Games account for following news about SFB Online, Starfleet Warlord, and FedCom Online. And of course, the lovely Talkcast gets turned to podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. ADB this week was quite quiet. I'm not sure why, but they were quite quiet. So not much there, just a reminder, of course, that there's plenty of wonderful things to find there, including Prime Directive. Players can find a treasure trove of play aids, including medals, insignias, maps, the timeline, lots of other goodies to spice up your Prime Directive games. And also, if you want to also go over to the Federation Commander's Circle, you'll find lots of wonderful things there in various formats for the Master Ship Charts, ship cards, and current and back issues of, I think, the communique. I think they still do the communique, because I think it's called something else at this point. Sorry that my notes here are just a little bit old, I think, at this point. But anyway, moving on to the SFB Online Tournament, which is Sapphire Star 12. It is starting very soon. We already have 8 signups. We only need 8 more, and we will be closing it all up. Actually, I think we're up to 10. Up to 10, so we have 6 slots still available. I'm one of those people, so you can maybe actually have to fight against moi, and I will kill you. And so if you want to, you can go right over to the SFB Online website. The tournament sign-up is there. Also, a reminder, you need to pay for this. It's a $10 fee, and which, come on, it's $10. Jeez. It's not much at all. And because the tournament will be lasting probably 3 months or so, you know, $10 for 3 months, that's dirt cheap. It's less than $3. It's like a little more than $3 a month. You know, if you last, I know that's not an easy thing to do. It's, you know, easier said than done. Moving on to the library report. Actually, we got quite a few updates for the libraries that will be occurring this weekend, because I had the chance to update one of the ships that I got a whole collection from Matt, and I will be working on getting those uploaded this weekend. But in the meantime, there's been no other updates for a FedCom library, and that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to the SFU On Call. Starfleet Universe On Call, that's it. One of those two. Sure, recognize I'm going a little fast this time. I apologize. It's just a weird day. But anyhow, I know Doug's supposed to be showing up. Dave's here, though. Then we got the chat room. I'm sure Dave will be over in the chat room too, because he loves to be over in the chat room with everybody else. See if Russ shows up, which if Russ shows up, I definitely want to mention something to him just to let him know that I got his intro. I need to do a little work on the intro because of it's beautiful. It's great. The video is great. No sound. So I'm assuming he thought it best if he didn't have any sound so that I could add to it. And that's great. You know, I think that will work out just fine. So for you guys on YouTube, you'll be seeing the intro probably starting next week. I'm hoping to rope my daughter in on this and get some sound effects to go along with the video so she can add that in the proper time, because I know it's gonna take a little bit of work, and I can just pawn it off on her because she does a great job. Obviously, I'm going to also have an intro of me on that. Well, probably the intro I usually use for the audio podcast people, so they already hear that for the audio podcast. For the video on YouTube, you guys don't hear that. What I normally record and put at the front of this beautiful and wonderful recording, which gets posted up to YouTube and to TalkShoe and iTunes and all the rest of the podcasting places around the net. So since Doug is not here quite yet, and hopefully he'll arrive in time. Actually, let me do it just here on my monitor. And so what we'll start off with for this evening is we're going to start with some of the tournament ships. Okay, he's still not here yet. But in the meantime, okay, you guys keep an eye out for him. Okay, and that would be fantastic. So we're going to start off with going through some of the, we're going to do what I was planning on doing last week. Zoom in. Okay, this should do better. Yeah, there it is. That's much better. Much better. Make it a lot easier to see. Which is, I wanted to go through some of the playtest tournament ships. Some things that I can't remember actually going through these before. I know they've been mentioned in passing, but they have not really been mentioned and discussed, at least a little more deeply, and shown about what are the. Oh, I think he just showed up. But anyway, you know, that's one thing I want to get around to, is actually talking about the playtest. Now, I understand that for when it comes to Jindarian, actually in Jindarian, I'm pretty sure that this ship is the official ship. But still, I want to talk about this one, you know, the Jindarian metal one, which, as I mentioned last week, I think is the problem with the Jindarian overall is basically the weapon, not the Margs themselves, mean railguns, but I think they've got nice, plenty of power. The problem is, of course, the arcs suck. Arcs, I think they need to be modified for the tournament. I'm pretty sure Barry would agree wholeheartedly on that. But in the meantime, Doug. Okay, I just clicked Doug. Doug should be coming up soon. Okay. Hey, Doug.
Hi, Paul. How you doing tonight? I love my cat.
I know you love your cat.
By the way.
I know you love your cat. I love my cats.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, she had a little issue with my phone.
She wanted to play with it?
No. She apparently knocked down the thing earlier today, and I didn't notice it. The station.
Oh. So.
Yeah, and I just had to find the station, find the plug that went into the station, find the plug that went into the plug into the station. You get the idea.
Yeah.
So it's all back together now. And I found that out, like, right when I was going to call in. So.
Yay. Oh, jeez.
I love my cat. She's around here somewhere going meow.
And
she doesn't want to be next to me.
But at the same time, that stand is also your charger, isn't it not?
Say again?
The
Oh,
stand.
yeah, it's one of the chargers. But there's like I've it's a set.
Okay,
I have
so
more than
you,
one phone.
okay, so you have one which is not the base station, but has its own little charger,
It
which.
was the base station. It was the base station. I couldn't even call out.
Right. Oh, understood. Understood. But
Because it's the base station.
you have two phones, so in theory, you could just use the other phone. I mean, with the base station, even
Yeah, once I
if
got the
the
base
other
station
phone was the
together.
phone that's usually with the base station was not charging.
Well, it wasn't a matter of the charge. I have multiple phones.
I know.
It was the base station knocked down.
Oh, understood.
So there's no connection.
But at the same time,
The part that's plugged into the landline.
understood. Oh, Doug, I totally understand that. But another consequence of said action is that the phone that's with the base station most probably was not being charged either. That's why.
Oh yeah, you mean the one that's in the charger right now getting charged?
Yes.
Yeah. That very one. Agreed.
Okay. That was the thing I was trying to be pointing out. Sounds like today I'm doing a really, really poor job of communicating things with people. So I apologize for all the miscommunication and bad communication that I've done so far today, even though you guys have not seen it or heard it. Well, you've now heard it, so it's okay. But anyway, I know the topic for tonight that Doug wanted to go back to actually was that last week's topic, which was Effany and Andrew Wars. Specifically, Doug, if I understand what the topic you want to talk about is basically the issue with the RTN and how that can work when it comes to the F&E map and how the interactions between the RTN and how the drums keep it hidden, because I think everyone here will agree that I think the best way of the only way to make it interesting and as very close to the quote unquote unquote reality that the Galactics were facing is to have it so the Andromedan play if the, there's going to be an Andromedan player, that's the whole idea of this, can do things in secret so that it basically the Galactics are completely and utterly blind to what the Andromedans, how their RTN is all set up now. Of course, there is the whole issue of the Dungeons and Dragons issue, is what I call it, which is you've read the monster manual, you know what the monsters can do, so you have foreknowledge of. In this case, you have foreknowledge that there is an RTN network out there. You just don't know where it is. And obviously, part of the rules for this is going to be that you can't really see it. Start searching for the RTN as a limitation of the whole idea of being blind to that the RTN actually exists for until a certain year. That's kind of that part's kind of obvious to start out with. But the mechanism in place to hide the RTN, how the RTN will interact or interface with the normal F&E map, that's the question that I think we wanted to discuss today. Am I not? Am I correct?
I believe so. You have communicated properly.
Yay!
Congrats.
That's what won for me today. Awesome.
Okay, so I got a couple things for you, Paul.
Okay.
Did you check Facebook recently?
I checked it earlier
I'm guessing the
this
answer is
evening. Yes, but are you talking? Oh, yeah, I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I asked you if there was a while back, I asked you through the messenger thing there if there was a good link for like the lore stuff for the Andros
Oh,
in
yes.
SFB.
Yes, and I think
Because
you.
I found one thing that raised a bunch more questions than it answered. Because what I was looking for was how does the RTS work? Because knowing how it
You mean
works would actually
RTN?
help with maybe integrate it.
Yeah, you mean
And I
that?
had two thoughts on it before I saw this article that had a whole bunch of good stuff about the Andro lore. And it doesn't answer the question about how does the RTS work. But to go back to the Dungeons and Dragons aspect of it that you were talking about as an example last week. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just pacing back and forth. I'll try to set the phone down so it doesn't do that.
It's okay.
What is basically one thing that could be done would be just to simply abstract it. Like you put so many research points into it, roll a die, earn so many more research points, and eventually you get to there's an RTN node here that we can attack.
Right, like how the labs work currently for SFB.
Right. And that way you don't have to have an extra ship in it. But the player has to reveal where that node is. And one of the other thing was having it so that you could literally park a ship. I forget if the Galactic Survey cruisers are included as units, but if they're not, you could like designate one, set it aside. But it comes down to kind of like, what degree do you do it in a strategic game versus nuts and bolts? Like in the strategic game, you could have a designated, electronic warfare ship, scout ship of some kind, escort ship, play the role of being the. Hi, kitty cat. Welcome back. Yeah, she exiled herself for a little bit while I was realizing what the deal was with the phone.
Yep. Hey,
Ahem.
and usually it's my cat
The smarter cat.
that's interfering with the podcast. So
Yeah. So at any rate, and the thought was in the lore, it was saying that in the lore, oh, well, that war's ending. Haha. Just had a notice and another thing. So, at any
Eve.
rate, sorry about that.
Okay.
The Merc Corp is in a couple wars, and one of them just lost structure, and that war's ending, and that's a win for our side
Cool.
in that. But at any rate, as I was saying, the I just derailed my own train of thought, which is not hard to do these days. To what degree do you want to get into it with that? Because in the lore stuff that I was reading, that's in that link I sent you, basically they would have the scout ship go out, do its electronic warfare thing, find the node, and then hopefully survive long enough for the other ships to show up and kill that part of the RTN. But on top of that, they were saying that the nodes themselves were very easily disassembled and moved. So when you have the attack coming in on the node, it's a matter of do you have the fleet close enough? If it's not within a certain range and you can't move there in one turn move, then the player may have the opportunity then to relocate that to another hex on the map. And they could play this big shuffling game.
Right.
And if you don't find the node in time, and you don't have the fleet nearby to get to it, you can't get into the system to go after them to destroy that part of the node, and then work your way down the system to where you're going outside of the galaxy to go to the Lesser Magellan Cloud and stuff.
Right.
So the question, I guess, for them is going to be, how do they want to do that? Do they want to do that on a turn track where it says, okay, here's how it historically went, so you can play the historical thing? But then it comes to another whole other issue of what goals do the Andromedans have? Now, in the lore stuff that I was reading earlier, they didn't just go after, the empires in that you see on the F and E map. They also went after the other quadrants. And
Right. Oh, yeah.
And basically, their goal appears in the lore to be take over a region, build a mega ship, start their colonies and so forth after they wipe everybody out. So the question then becomes, how much do they have to economically weaken a region? Would they be taking over a whole bunch of other, you know, the provinces? Are they going to just leak points away to get to a certain amount that says they're strong enough to come in and set up? Or are they going to actually come in and set up a star base? Now, it's like, what's the goal for the Andromedan player other than being booga booga, I'm here now. Come get me, come find me in the closet, find me up underneath the stairs. You know, where am I in the haunted house? No. They actually have a goal that they're working towards,
right?
And they lose at that goal in at least the two that are written about, and there's this whole big, we don't know how they fared in other parts of it, but when the galactic powers got outside and went to the Lesser Magellan, they nixed the invasion, what was coming in at least,
right?
Versus what was already there, because what was already there was still kind of a nuisance for a while. So, I guess the big question then is, now what's the goals of the Andros? How do they win? How do they take over? Or is their goal simply to survive long enough that the Empire takes them forever to kill them, or they just can't quite do it? You know, do they play to a draw? Do they play to victory? As far as mapping it goes, I had some thoughts about that, you know, but that's a whole other topic. Okay, I've been talking for a while. Does any of that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, agreed. I think you got an excellent point, which is, what are the goals of the Andromedans? Obviously, I think part of the goals of the Andromedans is to take over the galaxy. But, and that's why you have RTNs. The idea is to have be able to, with a relatively small force, smaller than the Galactics, be able to move those forces quickly from point A to point B. Now, obviously, part of the plan is have it so that in this case, they've already set up headquarters up at LMC, and they're building up their Devastator and improving the link to the Andromedan Galaxy and getting in supplies that way. Part of that obviously is to successfully do that before the Galactics find out the RTN, find out how, the forces are coming in from the LMC, how they're being reinforced, with the ships that they have, and, them getting more ships, any destroyed ships, and how that's occurring, because the Andromedans, as we know them, as part of SFB, they don't actually build ships in the actual Milky Way. In the Milky Way galaxy, they don't. At least to our knowledge, they didn't have any ship-building facilities. They could repair the ships, but they couldn't build them. And, the only one that we found out that they were actually building was in the LMC. I think that the rest are considered imports. They actually were sent from Andromeda. They're built in Andromeda and sent forth into into the Milky Way, to the LMC, and then for the LMC into the Milky Way. So I'm assuming that the part of their goal is to keep that flowing and be able to defeat the Galactus force and take over, basically. Do what they did in LMC, but at a much larger scale. In this case, the Alpha Octant, defeat that. And, I know they had multiple prongs of attack. They also were attacking the Omega Octant. Now, the question is, of course, the one thing that we do not know, we have no way to know, but it's because the history has not been written, or at least, and that is what happened in the other octants. Did the Andromedans limit themselves only to the Omega and the Alpha, which are closest? I'm assuming, this is completely my assumption, that they're the closest ones to the LMC. And that's why, you know, they attacked the Alpha and the Omega octants. Because there's a whole huge swath of, was it the Sargasso octant or some? The ones which is really screwed up. Where the Zerkalians come from. I can't imagine the Andromedans actually surviving against the Zerkalians just because of the way that part of the galaxy, Sargasso, thank you. The Sargasso storm sector, thank you, Chris. The way the Sargasso storm system sector, they kind of worked in that cycles of storms, you know, that there was people would hold up in their little, you know, solar systems until the storms basically subsided, and then they could travel interstellarly again, you know, from system to system at that point. And the Zerkalians were taking that. Now, I'm not sure how the Sargasso storm sector could actually affect the RTN. My guess, it would affect it great deal because they're just moving at higher speeds. It's not like they are bypassing the being within this galaxy for, you know, being more like Star Wars in... when you go to light speed, you're going interdimensionally. Well, yeah. When you enter light speed, you're actually going into hyperspace, is what you're going into.
Doing a traveler jump, basically.
Right.
Yeah. It's basically just a jump. Yeah.
Well,
that was the other question: is how does the RTN work? I mean, if it's basically like a big acceleration gate that takes what their mothership is doing for speed and just flings it, gives it a huge boost to last for a certain amount of time, or does it like warp space point A to point B?
Right.
I don't know. It's kind of like a very, very gray area.
Oh, agreed. And, yeah, how large of a base does each node require? You know, things like that. Could it just be a small little base station? A satellite base, that's it, satellite base. You know, or does it require something larger to be a node in the RTN network?
Yep, these are questions that need to be answered by the guys that are going to put the game out, basically. But on the other hand, even if it's just, you know, space squiggle magic, point A to point B,
mm-hmm.
even so, I mean, it's just, how do you find them?
Yep.
But then, this is the other thought is, if it's being treated, let's say we mapped out the Lesser Magellan Cloud, and you make it into a map that's, you know, a substantially smaller one than the F&E map. Because maybe they cover a smaller area, but there may be less resources there that are worth mentioning, but the distances are the same. So you might need, you know, you could have the same kind of strategic scale map for that.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get in there, you can either go point to point at an extended cost, or you go through the regular movement hex by hex. If
right.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there is a I know, I'm pretty sure there was a scenario where the satellite ships, you know, I think one of the, there was a collection of satellite ships that were moving in real-time space instead of, you know, moving in the RTN because they didn't have a mothership, that they get intercepted. Right. I think if I call correctly, there is a scenario which where that, that occurs.
I'd have to, yeah, they basically, it's a convoy scenario for them.
Right, right. Exactly, exactly. And overall, you know, I like the idea of that you had, you mentioned earlier, which is the whole idea of kind of gaining intelligence. You know, each turn you roll some die, and that's how much more intelligent you get about the Andromedans in that part of the galaxy. No, that part on the map. You know, maybe have sections. Have it so it's laid out in sections. And now, whether you want the sections to be larger than the current provinces, I think that's what they ha- I think that's what the FNE calls them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or you want to have them as a collection of the of provinces and say, okay, this is a Andromedan search zone or something like that. Yes, Kitty.
Well, you can,
we're busy here. Sorry, but
okay,
you can't play yet. You can't play now.
Is that your cat or my cat?
Your cat.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking to your all cat. Right.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Yep. Anyway. Yep.
The big thing about the Magellan Cloud, the design of it is it could be either or. It could be all area based movement where you get the intel and you go from point to point. That would probably be the easiest way to do it. And another way would be to give them provinces. Because one of the things I was seeing in that particular chunk of lore that I read up on it was that they actually were building stuff in the LMC.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they have a limited production capacity.
Right.
And their big thing was once they got their foothold in the galaxy, they would set up their own production facility eventually. So, there's that. I mean, the other side of that is, do they come in on a schedule that's incredibly limited, or does the Andromedan player get to use the normal SFB production type economy rules?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there a combination of the two? You know, here's all the ones coming in from where they invaded, or is all the stuff that they brought in on that invasion all they're getting? That all that comes from the original galaxy into there?
Right, right.
I mean, it's kind of a toughie for them because, you know, it's something that would have to be really finely balanced, because if they're too capable of building stuff, then unless there's a severe timetable in the game as far as, you know, what constitutes the ending point, then they would be able to eventually overrun the galaxy no matter what. But
right.
If it's too weak, then, you know, they'll run out of stuff too quickly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And as the whole idea, here's the thing. The whole idea of FNE is to be able to play out the general war and possibly further than that within a certain degree, because of you want to give the players flexibility to change certain things about what actually gets produced, what are the tactics and strategies that are used when it comes to placement of those ships after you build them. You know, so you got some restrictions in FNE when it comes to when you can build ships, but placement, you know, how many of those ships you build, what economics did you use to build those ships? You know, what's your economy and all that. That's part of F&E. And that's going to be the same thing when you introduce the Andromedans. In that, okay, they're gonna have a certain economy. They're gonna have a certain bit of, probably limitations themselves when it comes to schedule and so forth, because of I forget which module it is that they actually have a kind of a schedule, which they show of, this kind of ship, this main ship shows up, this year. Now, I'm not sure if that's set in stone or that was a first guess at the numbers when it comes to the Andromedan ships that showed up. So. Now, I just want to bring up this is a crazier idea out there when it comes to this. And actually, this isn't the first time I've heard about this idea. Actually, the first time was earlier this week. And that is Chris Nuzzi in the Twitch.tv chat room was mentioning, Vassal, you could really do it. And he's saying the only way to play F&E is Vassal. But it brings up the whole idea of something that's happening in more board games today. There's currently two kinds of board games. There's the third that's just started to show its head when it comes to playing physical board games. And that is virtually on a screen on the computer. And that is one, of course, old school. Everything's done offline. There's no electronic components. Then you have two, which actually, if you think about it, this second one has been around for decades, which is electronically augmented games, board games. A good example of this is Dark Tower. That was an electronically augmented game because everything, all of the fights and so forth were done in the Dark Tower. That little piece of electronics that was in the middle of the board. And then the third one, which is I heard mentioned, but no one's actually seen implemented, and it could be quite interesting, which of course is an AR board game. The idea is that the pieces are virtual. Now, the one thing that the person that mentioned this was that you would have to, the question is interactivity, interacting with those pieces. What do you do? My guess is that you just still have like physical pieces, like bases, and then all the pieces that would be projected onto the into AR, what is it, Kat? Into the AR display. In this case, they're thinking along the lines of a VR, an AR/VR headset, probably VR headset, an AR headset. Excuse me, Kat. I would think that that's the kind of interactivity that you'd have to have, which is actually kind of basis, and you could see your pieces, and they would, yeah, I know the kitty. You could see them on the board, and so they could be shown to be whatever kind of piece that you want them to be, and you have so in a virtual reality, you could actually have it so that the case of, let's say, plain simple game of checkers. When you actually king the checkers, they chain into a king piece. You'd actually look like a king or something like that. Something more visually nice to represent the elevation of that piece or whatever. That's something that's been thought of, but they really haven't been seeing any real games that have been doing this yet. And that's because of it requires AR glasses to do that. And I was thinking about it, and it's like, you know, for that kind of thing, it has to be a very quick game, because most people have problems with that kind of thing after like an hour, you know. So, but anyway, but it brings up the second one, which is, as I said, electronically augmented game. In theory, what you could do is, as part of Android Wars, is go modern. And that is, have some of that stuff handled by an app. Instead of having physical boards and so forth, have it done by an app or website or whatever that could manage the hidden Andromeda map, so that possibly maybe even having the Andromedans, they'll be required to use the app to do all their moves, so that, you know, and what would happen is the computer itself would be the judge, you know, the umpire, referee, when it comes to this kind of stuff. So then you could still play it, and you have, so that verification of the computer itself would actually be verifying that step. Now, of course, there's one thing that I've found out about this, doing something like that. There's always the one big issue: bugs. Bugs in the software. If you don't get it right in the software, that can make things very difficult. That's why I learned this out the hard way when I made FedCom Online, where I tried to implement the rules of FedCom for, you know, not complete rules, but most, you know, the basics, you know, the forcing how much energy is spent or can, you know, when it comes to weapons, when it comes to movement, things like that. It made it really hard to fix any. If I had a bug in the code, that means that game could be completely ruined because of you're paying too much, not paying enough for your weapons or for your speed, you know, and therefore you had less or more power available than you really should have had. So I've learned that the hard way, you know, when it comes to doing that versus that, when it comes to the client, the SMB way, which is basically, it's a tool. You can cheat all you want, but here's a tool to help you play the right way or the wrong way, your choice. But, you know, in that category. So I think, you know, that the whole idea of having a electronically augmented game, Android Wars being electronically augmented, is definitely an interesting idea. Well, would ADB really be interested in that? Probably not.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't want to pay a developer for that.
Right, right. And
well, it kind of goes away from their whole thing of the board game aspect. Everything's right there in front of you, all hands on.
Well, old school.
Yeah, the old school.
Yeah, the question would be, you know, even if you could get, let's just make it a website. So a website that can be accessed from a phone or from a tablet or for a computer, all that, any of those. That makes it, that's the cheapest cost right there. So you don't have to try to get the app, you know, submitted to with app stores and all that kind of, and deal with all that kind of BS. Because sometimes it is BS.
For that matter, are they going to put out, do they have, or have they put out, I'm not aware of it, if they did F&E as a electronic board game.
Right. Currently, the only one that's available is Vassal, you know, which is, you know, a free open source thing. Or you can play using Cyberboard. Boy, that's an old piece of software. I mean, old. I mean, is over a decade old. You know, and runs only on Windows. And as I think you could definitely play Ephne on Vassal versus S. There's certain things in SFB that just don't quite work when it comes to Vassal. And that, to me, and even FedCom really can't work perfectly on Vassal either, because both of those games have something which basically Ephne does not. Secret and simultaneous actions. In other words, in the case of, you know, SFB, one of those secret and simultaneous actions, the big one, is fire. You know, you can go for the whole call for fire and all that BS. But still, what you are firing should not get announced until all the parties involved in the game have written down and sealed their orders. And at that point, they will be revealed to all. So that's the big thing that Vassal currently cannot do. Oh, Chris, you're wrong. Chris is saying there's no secret info in FedCom. You're correct. There is no secret info, but there's still... No, there's me too firing, but look at the rules for launching... I forget, it's just seeking weapons or just plasma. But that part is secret and simultaneous. If you look the rules... You will find it that part of it is secret and simultaneous. So, it's one of those few quirks in the FedCom when it comes to not having things that slow down the game, you know, which is the whole idea. That's one of the things with secret and simultaneous. Also, Chris, if you think about it, there is secret info in FedCom. Again, energy allocation. You both do that at the same time, secretly, because even in FedCom, energy allocation, there is something called energy allocation in FedCom. The reason why we have that, you know, one is speed. Speed's always secret to begin with. And then, of course, you have multi-turn arming weapons in FedCom, which, again, whether it's a overloaded or not overloaded, at the time, before you announce it, before you're kind of done the energy allocation, quote-unquote, that's not known until you reveal it. So, you know, so there are certain things that are still kind of secret and simultaneous in FedCom. So it can, it's not, and as I pointed out before, in theory, you can actually play. Yep, there it is. Thank you, Chris. Chris looked it up. Rule number 4F2A of the FedCom rulebook. Quote, if several players are launching seeking weapons at the same times, players should write down the unit launching, the weapon, and the original facing of the weapon, and the target of the weapon. All this information is then revealed simultaneously. So, yeah. that's one of those things that is still there, you know. So, but anyhow, I understand that using electronic augmented board games is definitely something for a newer crowd. If we were to go forward, that had to be one possible for a whole brand new game. Because I can't imagine some of the old-time people that have been playing FNE for years, if not decades, being willing to switch, to have part of their game require a computer, basically being electronically augmented. Now, as here's the gotcha, which I was just thinking about when it comes to electronically augmented games. And that is, if the software aspect of that game ever goes away, you can't play the game anymore.
Yeah, it's just dependency.
Yep, exactly.
You're absolutely dependent. Somebody's still offering that and offering support for it.
Yep.
And that's something that's kind of a turnoff to me. I mean, I get a game, buy a game, I want it to be something that it's basically mine forever. I can pull it off the shelf, lay it out, play it, and not say, oh, we can't play chess today because I don't have the servers down. I mean, I understand that with, say, you know, subscription games, electronic games, but that's an entire thing to itself. It's not something I'm buying and putting on my shelf.
Oh, agreed. But even electronic games, I know this is many, many years ago at this point, when the Xbox came out, there was a big hubbub about from the people, you know, from the Navy, you know, people in the Navy, the submariners who wanted to play Xbox in their subs, and they couldn't because I required an internet connectivity. You know, even though you might have bought the thing, a physical disc, it still required you to be connected to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
yep.
And Lord knows this is not, the Xbox is not the only game. These days, a lot of games require some kind of internet connectivity, if for nothing else, just to check to make sure that you have a valid copy of your game. Make sure you're not pirating that copy of the game. That would be a bad, bad thing.
Well, it's a trend in electronic stuff, and it's one that I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, years ago, I picked up some software through Ollie's. You know what Ollie's is, right? The discount place, warehouse type deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Ollie's.
And I picked up some... This was way back during the independent film days. Picked up some software for doing, basically, you could design houses with it. It's mm-hmm. just shy of architectural level stuff.
Right.
But you could lay out all the plans. And I used it when I was in school for theater. I used it for doing stuff, for planning out things in independent film. But it still required you to connect if you went to install it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you go through a couple hard drives, that company's out of business.
Right.
You can't install the software anymore. And I would be incredibly leery of buying a game, even if it's ADB, you know, saying, okay, well, you know, here's the disc, and you have to do this electronically with the connection. You know, what if I get called up and I go back into service and I'm in freaking Nowheristan and I don't have a good internet
Timbuktu.
Or I can't do it for security reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I can't play that game. You know, it's like a waste of my money then, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also kind of like, it's like oil and vinegar, oil and water, oil and beer. It's like what mixes and what doesn't. What goes together well? What's going to work? Because what you're seeing is just an evolution of the gaming process.
Right.
And every time we have a new technological change or addition, it's just we'll try it out. It's like, you know, we're going to throw, you know, wings on our bicycle to see if we get a little bit more aerodynamics because we can fly now. And you don't see many people running around with wings on their bicycles because they just don't work.
Right.
It eventually gets changed to something else. Maybe the bikes get more aerodynamic, and that helps out some. Maybe they get new materials that they're made out, but it doesn't look like an airplane.
Right.
You know, but what you're kind of envision, what where that's going is an issue of dependency, and the problem with the electronic side of it is literally that dependency. We could pull out our games from the 70s, 80s, 90s, our board games, and play them 50, 60, 70 years from now, as long as they haven't rotted the dust.
Right, right.
You know?
Don't get me started.
Have
you heard about these Risk Legacy, I think it is one of them? These legacy games? The whole idea of a board game which never ends. Basically, you have your board. You write directly on the board what happens. And when you pick up the game again, you have to continue on from where you stopped. And if you want to restart the game, you need to buy another copy of the game.
Let me think about that. No.
Oh, agreed. Doug, you and me are too old school to go. The concept of it, I think it's kind of cool. The problem is that our generation, you know, us old school people, we like the idea of the reset button. Let's start from over from scratch and take advantage of what we learned, and instead of being stuck with all the mistakes that we made with the first time we tried to play the game. And to me, it almost seems to a certain degree to be you're going to a subscription model for physical games. That's what you're doing.
Yeah. You know, my favorite color is cynical, right? And basically, a lot of these things are just extra cash grabs. And the ones that are cynical cash grabs are the ones that they'll do well for a while, but they will fail in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
My opinion.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Because you can only burn somebody so often before they catch on and say, "Yeah, no more." Or, "Well, I like that idea, but I don't like having to pay $40 to play again every other day," or whatever. Yeah, that's just like, wow. Oh. At any rate, so back to F&A. A little.
Well, I thought.
Really, I guess the major thing is, how do you map it out? How do you connect it to F&A? And I think they would probably want to add an entire new additional map, kind of like, you know, and it could be justified under the fact that it's outside of the galaxy for the Lesser Magellan Cloud. And, you know, it just be a small map. It doesn't have to be the same size as the whole F&E, you know, two map. I think it was two maps, wasn't it? You know, together. Kind of thing. Or was it more than two? I forget. It's been so long since I pulled that out. But, no, F&E is two maps, isn't it? Am I wrong?
No, it's usually one big map.
One huge map. Okay, for some reason I kept thinking it was two maps. It's so huge.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
But no, they could probably justify like a small mini map that has area connectors, or just simply saying, okay, here's a bunch of different cards. Here's side A, side B. B connects to the other one. You know, something like that. So in F&E, they have those little side designators that you can put fleets in, and they have the planetariat the salt card things, the little extra, I'd call them mini maps, but they're little area maps, basically, for overflow and extra stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing is, what is the goal of the Andromedans? What is the, what can they actually do as far as building stuff goes, receiving stuff, and, oh my goodness. Yeah, and let me put this another way, slightly differently than the first time. No. So, looks interesting. I'm sure it's probably fun for somebody, but oh my goodness. Yeah. The I like my old Risk board games to be like, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
Back in a box.
Oh. Agreed.
We can try it again next year.
Right. Now, it mentions here, what's different is that Risk Legacy changes over time based on the outcome of each game and various choices made by the players. In each game, players choose one of five factions, you know, that have uniquely shaped pieces and, more importantly, different rules. At the start of each game, each of these factions gains the ability to break one minor rule, such as the ability to move troops at any time during the game, as opposed to only one player. What makes this game unique is when the powers are chosen, the players must choose one of the faction's two powers, affix the power stickers to their faction card, then destroy the card that has the other rule on it. And by destroy, I mean the rule means they... says, if a card is destroyed, is removed from the game permanently, ripped up, throw it in the trash. There's a key concept permeates through the game.
That is made by somebody who does not have their players' well-being in mind. Jeez. That's just awful.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
Agreed, because the question is, how long can you play that copy of the game before you have to basically throw it out? You know?
So at what point is it? How much do they want you to throw away on that?
Yeah, so it should be noted that all the cards are ripped up over the course of the game. There are so many cards added via sealed packages that the game does not suffer, nor is this a disposal game, merely a customized one. The one can continue to change beyond the 15-game campaign. Even when it does stop changing, you still have a copy of Risk that's completely unique. So basically, at a certain point, you stop throwing away things, and it becomes a static game once more. But it's like, yeah.
Yeah, let me... those people who made that, marketed it, and are selling it can be goddamn glad that I was not sitting in their boardroom when they came up with this. Because I would probably lose my shit on them for that. That's just so wrong in so many ways.
Oh, agreed.
But, you know, it could be a big hit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, this is when it just came out.
Could be the next.
2011 is when it came out. So it came out 11 years ago.
Okay. And, you know, I don't think I've ever seen that at Gamers ever. Which we are still having our fundraiser for, by the way, plug. I have until the 4th to decide on whether to cash in the fundraiser money or not.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that, if I say, okay, send it to my bank, I have to tell them where to send it, and we're throwing that into basically getting a place, or if I say, nope, not going to do it, then I just don't tell them by the 4th and they refund everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, we've beaten that over the dead horseness.
Yep.
The last month or so, I think.
Agreed. And as I said, we got like from today, 4 days. Yeah. And
5 essentially. Yeah. The 4th of next month.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's...
Unless there's an extra day.
Right, of course, that's today. So most people, other than the wonderful seven people in the chat room, and of course you and me.
Don't forget anybody that monitors.
Until tomorrow.
Yeah, all you robots listening.
By the way, Dave mentioned that on Amazon, I hate Amazon, Risk Legacy is running for about $50. Here's one of the things I hate about Amazon. The price is not the price. That price changes based on how much people want it. Capital forces at the micro level. So it might cost $20 right now. It might cost $25 in five minutes. And in 30 minutes, it could be now $40.
Well, the other question there is it coming from the source or is it somebody's thing they're ditching? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that somebody's game that they've played and decide they don't want anymore and they're selling it on Amazon?
Yeah, well, used games, yeah.
Original seller.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Don't get me started on that aspect of Amazon, which is third parties, and it doesn't seem like they vet third parties as well as they should. So,
Walmart copy is brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Is the one on Amazon like straight from the seller, or is it from, you know, Joe Blow that bought the game and decided they don't like it anymore and they're getting rid of it?
Yeah, but Amazon's not quite for the individual seller. eBay is for individual sellers.
It depends. No, that's why they have certified sellers on Amazon too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know,
you can also
buy some kind of Genesis or Abar the Jihadi there because Amazon bought out a small publishing firm that I went through to put those out. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just saying that they have all sorts of different things. They have. It's not just the Amazon company. It's a ton of little companies and very often some individual sellers. For some kind of justice, I had the hardest time, and I couldn't get them to do it. But one of the actors decided they were going to sell their copy of Some Kind of Justice for $50 a pop, whereas I had it listed for like $10 a pop for the DVD. And I contacted Amazon and said, hey, look, he doesn't own the rights to this. I do. He's not an original guy, you know, and they're saying, oh, well, we can't do anything about that, blah, 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 blah. And basically it's not worth the aggravation of having to go to basically New York City and file a lawsuit in federal court up there saying this guy is doing copyright infringement. It's just not worth the money for me mm-hmm. to do it. And time, the aggravation and everything.
Oh, I see.
When he's asking five times the amount that I'm asking for it. And I still haven't even made back the cash I put into the production. So, yeah.
But same time, Doug, why don't you expand your repertoire when it comes to lawsuits? Really?
No, don't get me started on that. No, I'm just saying that's what it would have taken. It would have been like
a cease and desist
from the court to get that guy off of Amazon. Because Amazon doesn't want to listen to me, the, you know, owner of the thing.
That's the copyright holder, yeah.
So, because I'm just some little guy, and I'm not a lawyer attacking them with a cease and desist letter. Yeah. But that's just me. That's just my opinion on Amazon. So It's an interesting thing, and it's part of the modern world. It's here to stay for a while unless it tanks tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay, well, Doug, it's time to wrap up this evening. Thank you for joining me and let's have a nice little discussion about the Andromedans and some interesting ideas when it comes to it. Andromeda's Andro Wars.
Yeah, it's the only thing that would make me want to live in Amarillo would be to sit down and talk to them about it. But, yeah, it's a bit far. The hello commute, so there's that.
I know, I know. I'm not sure the family would like to move.
Yeah, I would, but, yeah.
As I said, I said the family. I said nothing about you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that plus, you know, stuck in our ways and our places and old fartnesses. There you go.
Don't get me started on that. The whole idea, whole idea of, you know, working from have more people working from home and doing everything virtually over the computer. It's like, yeah, that's not go there.
Well, you know, that I kind of like it from the aspect of there's a lot of jobs that can be done that way.
Oh yeah, agreed.
And there's benefits to it. But on the other hand, you know, there are some you just can't do that way.
Oh, agreed. But the thing that gets me going really hard on this is that here's the thing, and something that no one's really thought of, at least I have not heard anyone express this opinion on it, which is, okay, yes, it means more people can have jobs from more places. Obviously, you have to have a good internet to begin with, but that's becoming more and more reality as the years go on. The problem I see is that if they can easily hire someone, they can easily fire someone with very little effort, and just hire the next person down the road.
That's also the state thing.
Right, and then of course
that's industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why I'm glad Sweetie works for the state. If they wanted to fire her by the time they got all the paperwork done, she'd be retired for 10 years.
Yeah. Oh.
Exactly, Kitty.
Understood.
But a lot of private sector stuff is still, gosh, it's just, you know, it is literally hire at will, and that's up to the employer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean. And whether or not they're going to stay in business doing what they're doing. That's a whole other kettle of fish there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just change in the modern age. So there's positives and negatives to it all.
Agreed. So, okay, well, I got shut down. I got to get things done to put this thing all together and make sure I'm going to bed before midnight.
All right, well, you have a good night, Paul. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, you're welcome. I'll see you on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay, bye. So, had a nice little discussion about F&E and Andro Wars, the idea of legacy games, of course, augmented games, and, of course, some of the downfalls of that. And Lord knows, some of those doesn't have to be legacy games. It could be modern electronic games, you know, and that whole issue there, you know. So, but that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.